Welcome to Finding Haven, where we dive deep into the real experiences of motherhood. I'm your host, Michelle, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker who specializes in maternal mental health. Today, we're talking about something that many mothers experience, but few feel comfortable discussing, maternal rage. Before we begin, I want you to know that if you've ever experienced intense anger as a mother, you're not alone. The shame and guilt that often follows these episodes can be overwhelming. But today we're going to break down what's really happening, and most importantly, what you can do about it. We'll explore not just what maternal rage is, but why it happens, how it affects us and our families, and most importantly, how to manage it in healthy ways. Let's start by understanding what maternal rage actually is. This isn't just getting angry when your toddler draws on the walls or feeling frustrated when your baby won't sleep. Maternal rage is an intense, overwhelming anger that can feel like it comes out of nowhere. It might manifest as screaming into a pillow, slamming doors, or having intrusive thoughts that frighten you. It's often accompanied by physical symptoms, racing heart, tight chest, clenched jaws, or trembling hands. The triggers? They're usually cumulative. Picture this. You're running on 4 hours of broken sleep. Your partner left their dishes in that sink again. Your toddler is having their third meltdown of the morning. And then you step on a Lego. That final tiny stressor becomes the match that lights the powder keg. What makes maternal rage particularly complex is its deep roots in societal expectations and the modern pressures of motherhood. Many mothers feel like they're supposed to be eternally patient, nurturing, and composed. When these intense feelings of anger surface, they're often accompanied by overwhelming shame and guilt. What kind of mother feels this way? They might ask themselves, not realizing that these emotions are far more common than they think. Let's talk about those societal expectations for a moment. We're bombarded with images of serene mothers who seem to handle everything with grace, from work presentations to toddler tantrums. Social media shows us perfectly organized homes, elaborate sensory activities, and mothers who apparently never lose their cool. The gap between these expectations and reality can feel like a chasm, and that disconnect often fuels our rage. It's worth noting that maternal rage isn't a new phenomenon. What is new is our willingness to talk about it. Throughout history, mothers have dealt with these intense emotions, but previous generations often had different support systems in place. Extended families lived closer together, communities were more interconnected, and the burden of childbearing was often shared among multiple caregivers. In contrast, today's mothers are often expected to work full-time while being fully present parents, maintain a pristine home while creating enriching experiences for their children, stay on top of their children's academic, social, and emotional development, preserve their individual identity while putting their family's needs first, and navigate an increasingly complex world of parenting advice and societal pressure. The physiological aspects of maternal rage is fascinating and important to understand. When we experience this intense anger, our bodies go into fight or flight mode. Cortisol and adrenaline flood our system, which explains those physical symptoms we mentioned earlier. This biological response, coupled with sleep deprivation and the constant demands of caregiving, creates a perfect storm for emotional overwhelm. Let's break down what's happening in your body during a rage episode. First of all, we have the trigger phase. Your amygdala, the brain's emotion center, detects a threat. Your body releases stress hormone. Your heart rate increases, your muscles tense, and your breathing becomes shallow. Then we have the escalation phase. Blood flow increases to your limbs, your ability to think rationally decreases, and your body prepares for fight or flight. Your perception narrows, and time might seem to slow down or speed up. This leads us to the peak phase. Maximum psychological arousal, potential for impulsive actions. There's difficulty processing information, overwhelming emotional experience, and physical symptoms are at their height. In the recovery phase, which comes next, gradual return to baseline. There's this physical exhaustion after the release of the rage. There's emotional aftermath, potential for shame and guilt. And then there is a need for repair and rest. It's crucial to note that maternal rage often coincides with other mental health challenges. It can be a symptom of postpartum depression or anxiety, though that's not always recognized as much. Many mothers experience these intense feelings without realizing they're struggling with a broader mental health issue that deserves attention and support. So let's explore some common co-occurring conditions. There's postpartum depression. There's a feeling of overwhelm and hopelessness. Maybe there's difficulty bonding with your baby, changes in appetite and sleep, loss of interest in activities, intense irritability and anger. This is not to be confused with the baby blues, which happens within the first 2 weeks of birth and generally resolves on its own. We also have postpartum anxiety. There's constant worry about your baby's safety, racing thoughts, and inability to relax. Physical symptoms like nausea or dizziness, hypervigilance and difficulty sleeping, intrusive thoughts about harm coming to your baby. There's also post-traumatic stress, difficult birth experience, previous trauma being triggered, flashbacks or nightmares, feeling constantly on edge, or avoiding certain situations or memories. This is not to say if you have maternal rage that there's definitely a co-occurring disorder, but just something to also think about. Another impact on maternal rage is the impact of isolation. In previous generations, mothers often had extended family nearby and stronger community support systems. Today, many mothers are trying to do it all alone, working from home while managing childcare, household responsibilities, and their own well-being. Or maybe the mother is working full-time and the child is in daycare and they're responsible for packing lunches, breakfast, dinners for their child, dropping them off at daycare, grocery shopping, going above and beyond, feeling like it's all on their shoulders. It can feel very isolating. This isolation can amplify feelings of anger and frustration, leaving mothers without healthy outlets or support systems to process these emotions. The modern motherhood experience often includes physical isolation, either, like I mentioned, working from home while parenting, living far from family support, limited in-person social interactions. There's restricted community engagement, reduced access to childcare. There's also emotional isolation, feeling like you're the only one struggling, difficulty sharing vulnerable feelings, fear of judgment from others, lack of authentic connections, limited opportunities for emotional release. This is combined with the digital connection paradox. Social media creates false comparisons. You go on to Instagram, you go on to Facebook, any other app like TikTok. It's very hard not to compare when you're seeing these perfectly curated posts. And it can be hard to remember that that might be only 5 minutes of someone's actual day and that they're only sharing their highlight reel. Virtual relationships have been starting to replace in-person connections. Not to say that virtual relationships are bad per se, but it is also important to have in-person connections. The digital connection paradox often leads to information overload. There's just so many opinions online, so much to research. A lot of people go to Dr. Google, and this can lead to anxiety, which is understandable. There's also the pressure to present a perfect online image. There's curated images, picture perfect, you know, the need or the drive to have followers or likes for each post. Now, it's important to understand the difference between conventional anger versus maternal rage. Understanding the difference between normal anger and maternal rage is essential. Conventional anger is proportionate to the situation and typically resolves once the triggering event has passed. Maternal rage, on the other hand, feels disproportionate and often leaves the mother feeling out of control. It's the difference between being annoyed at spilled milk and feeling an explosion of fury that seems to encompass everything that's gone wrong on your parenting journey. So let's break this down with specific examples. With conventional anger, there might be a feeling of frustration when your child refuses to put on their shoes, or getting irritated when toys are left out after multiple reminders. being upset when plans get disrupted, experiencing annoyances at everyday mishaps, or having momentary reactions to challenging situations. With maternal rage, a minor spill triggers an overwhelming emotional storm, or a small inconvenience leads to explosive reactions. Physical symptoms can accompany the emotional responses, and there can be a difficulty returning to baseline after triggers. There also might be a feeling of being out of control during these episodes. Now let's get to what you really came here for, the coping strategies. I'm going to break these down into several categories. We have the immediate interventions, prevention measures, and long-term solutions. Remember, these aren't just theoretical suggestions. They're evidence-based strategies that have worked for countless mothers in my practice. First, let's talk about creating your retreat strategy. This isn't just about walking away. It's about having a systemic approach to these moments when you're feeling overwhelmed. Let's create a calm down space. You can designate a specific area in your home. This could be in your bedroom. It could be in the bathroom, be a closet. We want to stock this space with comfort items, noise canceling headphones, if you have those and the ability to have them, written affirmations or reminder cards, a fan for cooling down, water bottle, simple snacks. Don't know if you want to keep those in the bathroom, but you know, to each their own. Now, if you have a partner, it could be something like developing a nonverbal cue. That means I need to tap out. I need you to step up in a very respectful way. So it could be a specific hand gesture. You know, it could be a thumbs up. Any other hand gesture that means something to you guys. Could be a code word or phrase. You could text each other an emoji that you both understand, a designated emoji, if you will. And then create a response protocol. So if you have a partner, who's going to take over the kids when you need to tap out? Or maybe it's you call your mom, or maybe you've been able to make a connection with, you know, another mother in the neighborhood who can come over while you take a 5-minute tap out. You know, then that's the conversation of how long is the tap out going to be? Is it 5 minutes, 10 minutes, things of that nature? And of course, these connections can take time to create. So we can talk about that as we continue throughout the podcast. But in the response protocol, you know, how to handle questions from your children. They might be like, oh, why is mommy, you know, not here? And talking about what that answer can look like in the response protocol. When can the person check in on you who's taking over, and how to support your return? So when you're ready to come back into the moment, how is that transition going to look? So let's talk about the 90-second rule in practice. So understanding the science. The initial chemical surge of emotion lasts about 90 seconds. So let's create a 90-second ritual. Set a timer on your phone when you notice the anger starting to build. We can focus on your breathing, notice physical sensations without judgment, and we can allow the wave to pass, the wave of anger. Let it flow through you. This is not about stopping the anger, stuffing it down, repressing it, because that, you know, might feel intuitive, but in essence, it's counterintuitive because it actually will stuff it down. And the more we stuff it down, the bigger the explosion, right? So allow yourself to ride the wave and then assess your state before re-engaging. Another thing to think about are environmental anchors. So we can actually place visual reminders around your trigger zones. So that could be, you know, if bath time is really stressful with the kids, maybe you have some bathroom mirror affirmations that you can look at that help to ground you. Like, I'm safe, I can get through this, things of that nature. There might be kitchen counter breathing prompts. So, you know, there's several different types of breathing exercises. There's the 4-7-8, where you inhale for 4. You're going to hold that breath for 7 and exhale long and slow for 8. Now, a lot of clients sometimes are like, oh my goodness, Michelle, that is just way too intense. Can't hold my breath for 7 seconds. No problem. I got you. You can shorten it. You know, inhale for 3, hold it for 4, exhale for 5. You can play around with what works for you. And over time, your lung capacity gets stronger. You can hold it for longer. But again, start small if this is a new practice for you. If you don't like that one, there's also the box breathing. So you're going to inhale for 4, hold for 4, Exhale for four, hold for four, and repeat. Maybe you have a bedroom door pause reminder where you print out the pause sign and put it on your door. Doorways can be super helpful because they're a transition in your house. It's transitioning you from one room to the next, right? So you're going from the bedroom to the hallway, from the hallway to the kitchen. And if you really stop and think about these transitions, it's every time I walk through the door, I take a deep breath. You know, every time I go from one place to the next, I'm recentering for a new location. So things to think about. And if these suggestions don't resonate with you, there's other things that may resonate. So give it a try. We just want to have a lot of different tools in your toolkit so that you can pull them out as needed. Another idea is having a car dashboard grounding cue. So, you know, taping something to your dashboard that resonates with you. You could even put something on your phone lock screen, message that's calming for you. So let's talk about situation-specific exit strategies. So if you're at home, safe spaces for each room, childcare backup plan like we talked about, that partner communication system, all great stuff. But what about if you're in public? What if you're in the grocery store or you're at the mall and something triggers you? So we can have a car retreat plan where we go back to the car to take a breather. Maybe we go to the public bathroom for some breathing space, or maybe a quick outdoor break. We don't need to go all the way to the car, but we just need, you know, space outside to breathe the fresh air. If you're at a family gathering, maybe there's a designated quiet room that you talk about, or a prearranged support person, or even transportation backup. So these are all things that we want to have set in place before the trigger happens. So maybe take some time after the podcast, kind of sit down as you're able and kind of think that through, even if it's just 2 minutes, like, okay, what is my response strategy going to be when I notice the anger is starting to build? What can I do to support myself in those moments so that I'm prepared? And again, this is not about perfection. We just want to have healthy systems in place to better support ourselves. So let's talk about physical release techniques. Sometimes individuals need both high energy and also calming activities to help discharge that intense energy from the rage. So high energy options, we can use wall push-up protocols. I'm not sure if you've heard of that, but basically just find a sturdy wall. You're going to place your hands at shoulder height and start with 5 slow push-ups. You're going to focus on your form and your breath, keeping your back straight. You're going to increase as needed, and you can add counting or mantras. There's also in-place running. You can start off with 30 seconds, focus on lifting your knees, add in arm movements, coordinate with breath, progress to high knees, things of that nature. Now, of course, if you've got your kids around, it might be hard to implement these things, but you can implement in small incremental ways and see what works for you. There's also full body release. So what can happen with maternal rage is that as we're feeling the feelings, we might feel shame and guilt. So we want to push it down, not feel it. But by encouraging ourselves to allow us to feel some of it, and let it move through the wave, like we talked about earlier, it can help to discharge and come back to baseline. So we can also do jumping jack sequences, traditional jacks, cross-body variations, low-impact modifications, breath coordination, cool-down transition, make it your own. There's also pillow work. So there's safe punching techniques. You can punch the pillow. You can coordinate it with your breath, alternate movements. You can also implement rage dancing protocol. Have your kids join you in a dance that's high energy. Put on a high energy song, shake it out, discharge that energy, have emotional release music ready to go, name it whatever you'd like, and then you can put a transition piece in that brings you back to baseline. Some other ideas are calming physical activities. So there's something called progressive muscle relaxation, also known as PMR. So it's a full body sequence, and we're going to progressively go through each muscle in your body, or you can pick specific muscles to focus on, which will then bring relaxation. Now, maybe this isn't something you can do when you're, you know, in the middle of the kitchen, right? But maybe after you've removed yourself, you have your partner watching the kids, you find a quiet space and set in your intentions with PMR. Get comfortable. Maybe you have your back up against the wall and you're sitting on a hard surface. Maybe you're leaning up against your headboard, sitting on your bed. Start with your toes and really wiggle your toes. Feel that sensation, and you can clench them and then release. You can move to your ankles, kind of roll them around, back and forth, then move up to your knees, move them back and forth, kind of flex and bend. Move to your thighs. You can clench and release, moving to your glutes, again clenching, releasing, and again moving all the way up until you reach your head, and it can bring a sense of peace. You can also from there move into gentle stretching. There's different pressure points as well. You can look to your third eye, massaging the point in between your eyebrows. That can be very calming. Or you can even go to cold exposure protocols. So that might be something as simple as turning on the ice-cold water at your kitchen sink, running your wrists under it, splashing your face with water. We can get some ice cubes, put them on the back of your neck. Ice therapy can be very beneficial for bringing down that cortisol. If you have a weighted blanket, I know those can be expensive, or you could get several blankets, put them on top of each other. You can press the wall, put your feet on the ground, and really feel the energy from the earth coming up and grounding you. And again, all of these might not be appropriate when you're with kids and you need to focus on them. But again, if you have a partner or someone who can tap in, take over, and then you're doing these exercises on your own. Another grounding exercise that I really like is the five senses. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, sensory awareness. So it's a detailed sequence. You're going to look around for five things that you can see just within your vision. You're going to label four things that you feel. So, you know, do you feel the wind on your skin? Do you feel the fan around you? Do you feel the carpet on your feet? Is it soft? Is it hard? What are three things that you hear? Do you hear the school bus braking? Do you hear the birds chirping or the dogs barking? Things of that nature. Then we're going to move to two things that you smell. And then finally, one thing that you taste. So this is really getting you out of your head and into your literal environment that is around you, right? So out of the things that are stressing you out, and what is the concrete, you know, real environment in front of you, which leads us to body scanning, meditation, and physical anchoring techniques. So we had talked about grounding your feet firmly on the floor. You can put your hand on your heart. You can trace your fingers. So you can focus on what you're holding. So really bringing you back to environmental grounding. So kind of also thinking about, okay, where are the four corners of the room? Where's the light coming from? Is it a sunny day? Is it cloudy? What's the temperature? What things are you hearing? Things of that nature. And we can move into movement-based grounding. So something as simple as heel toe rocking, you know, back and forth on your heels, finger tapping. You rub your hands together, that can be very calming. So all the way from the heel of your hand, take your fingertips from there, move it all the way up until the other fingertips reach the heel of your hand and back and forth. It creates friction and it creates a calming sensation. And you can even put that hand then on your heart for extra calming. Another thing that can really help with maternal rage is sleep hygiene. Now I know what you're thinking. Michelle, I get no sleep at all. That's not even possible to talk about. Well, okay, let's kind of think about some factors that are going on here. You know, have you spoken with your partner, if you have a partner, about sleep shifts? Do you actually have a concrete plan there? You know, I work with some clients who's like, oh yeah, my partner and I take turns. And I'm like, okay, well, what exactly does that look like? Are we actually breaking it down so that you're getting a few hours of sleep while your partner is on call? And yes, if you're in the early stages of motherhood and you're breastfeeding, that might take a little bit more nuance. but really getting down to the nitty-gritty conversations with a partner is so important. So maximizing your sleep opportunities, creating optimal sleep environment. Do you have blackout curtains? Is the room cool enough to promote sleep? Have you eaten, you know, enough so that you're not waking up with a drop in blood sugar? Do you have a pre-sleep routine that encourages restfulness? What happens when you do wake up in the middle of the night and it's your shift? How are we easing into that? So great things to think about. So creating that parent rotation schedule, implementing rest during the day, is that even possible? Is there someone that you can have come over, watch your kids? If you don't have a partner, it's the weekend, things of that nature. Another option, hiring a night nurse when possible. I know that's not always financially feasible, but it could be something to think about. Maybe cutting other things out, making that a priority if it's really, you know, necessary. And building your village. I speak with a lot of moms who are so isolated and they're nervous about getting out there, which is totally understandable. And I encourage you to look into that. What could that be like for you? You're in an area. Are there any Facebook groups? Are there any neighborhood connections? Who lives next door? I know some clients will talk about, oh, I don't know my neighbors. I'm nervous to talk to them. And I encourage you to kind of look at that. And is that an avoidance piece, you know, that's blocking you from getting help or receiving community support? Can we look at that as an opportunity for growth even? And, you know, not in a shameful way, but in a way of looking at what other resources are there that doesn't cost money. Can we build relationships with other parents? What would that look like? Can we establish regular play dates so we can support each other? Is there a neighborhood book club that you can get involved in? Things like that. And as far as professional support, finding the right therapist can be important. It can take, you know, one or two times meeting with someone to find the right fit. I'm a huge proponent of the right fit. The research does show that your rapport with your therapist shows the best outcomes. You know, outside of the type of therapy that they're doing, you want to feel comfortable with the person that you're sharing your innermost thoughts and feelings with. Are there any virtual support groups? There's an organization called Postpartum Support International that I'm associated with. They do such wonderful work. I just went to their conference back in July in DC. They have virtual free groups that you can join. If you go to their website, Postpartum Support International, you can look at all the different types of support groups that they have. You don't even have to turn your camera on Zoom. You just introduce yourself and then you can just listen. You can share what you're going through. And it's so wonderful to just to hear what other women are going through so you don't feel so alone. Now let's dive deep into boundary setting, one of the most crucial yet challenging aspects of maternal rage management. We're going to break this down into practical, implementable steps that you can start using today. So we have partner boundaries. So if we look into this, let's talk about the division of labor. A lot of times it falls to women. So we're planning the grocery shopping, we're planning the meals, making the meals, cleaning up the meals. That's not even to mention shopping for clothes, toiletries, things to keep the house running. If you're finding that you are really overwhelmed, maybe it's a great opportunity to have a discussion with your partner. If you have a partner, you know, how do we feel about the division of labor here? How are we managing the household? I feel I need support in this area. Where do you feel you need support? Things of that nature. Are you having weekly planning meetings? Can you just have a quick 10, 15-minute conversation to check in, you know, planning for the upcoming week, balancing workload, what work meetings do you have? These are the work meetings I have. What, you know, school activities do the children have? Just making sure that you guys are on the same page so things don't fall through the cracks and it's not all landing on mom. So as I stated, you know, you can use I feel statements. You can have a spot where you talk about what you do appreciate the other is doing. So it's not all, oh, this is going wrong, but it's also, hey, like I really did appreciate when XYZ happened and you handled that really well. That can be great to hear. And then, you know, having a problem solving framework. Here's an issue. How can we work together to get through this? Another important thing is Sometimes parents feel so overwhelmed in the beginning of having kids, you feel like the relationship goes to the wayside. So can we still have connection moments? Is there 10 minutes for, you know, cuddling or feeling connected, you know, before baby wakes up? Or maybe having a date night outside the house is impossible, but can you guys watch a movie as a family? Things might look a little bit different, but it's still important to be intentional in small, meaningful ways. And sometimes arguments come up because parents aren't on the same page with discipline philosophy or educational goals, values alignment. So I encourage you guys to sit down and chat through those things. As far as personal time management, are you giving yourself enough self-care? And that doesn't mean bubble baths or getting your nails done, but are you taking time to take your mental health walk? Maybe you need a 10-minute walk every day. If your partner is able to play golf on Saturday while you're with the kids, are you also able to take time another weekend where you're able to do a hobby or see your girlfriends, things of that nature? So just something to think about. And not saying that golf for your partner is bad, but you know, I do work with clients who that is an issue, and we kind of look through, well, what can we do for mom for her to be able to have alone time or a rejuvenation time? Getting your partner on board might feel stressful, but having that conversation of it's for the benefit of the family, benefit for mom, can be really eye-opening. Maybe your partner didn't even realize that you needed this. You might be thinking, how could they not realize? And they're not mind readers, so open communication can be so helpful. Another thing that can really impact maternal rage are boundaries with families or lack thereof. Do you have family members popping over whenever they want? Are there clear visitation guidelines that need to be implemented or advance notice requirements or conversation of the duration that they're visiting, times of days? Is there understanding about holidays? Holidays can be a huge trigger and a lot of stress for parents. So creating a plan for those can be important. Coming back to the small check-in points with yourself can be so huge. Do you have check-in points throughout your day? Maybe it's a 5-minute meditation pause point during your morning coffee. Maybe when the kids are having a nap, you do some yoga. Maybe when you're waiting in line to pick up the kids from school, you have your mantras that you go through. Maybe you invite the kids into dinner prep and you do mantras together, affirmations together. So it's building a distress tolerance mindset throughout the day so that when triggers are coming, you're able to ride the wave a little bit easier. Can you do a body scan throughout the day? Where's there any stressed points? Can there be a gratitude pause or an energy check-in? And again, this is all to support you. If you notice any shame or guilt coming up, you know, that is information from your body just letting you know we need some more self-love, self-attention to come into play. If you're noticing an increasing frequency of rage episodes or difficulty controlling reactions, if you find yourself pulling away and isolating from support systems, changes in your eating or sleep patterns, or avoiding the trigger situations, or finding persistent guilt and shame, depressive symptoms, it might be time to reach out for support. And there are so many wonderful mental health professionals out there that would be happy to support you. There is cognitive behavioral therapy, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. I love working with somatic experiencing and acceptance and commitment therapy. There is the National Maternal Mental Health Hotline, 1-833-9-HELP-FOR-MOMS. There's the Postpartum Support International Helpline. That's 1-800-944-4773, local crisis centers that you can reach out to. And of course, if you're interested in working with me, I'm at healinghavenclinic.com. But again, it's most important to get the help that you need, that you feel comfortable with, and I advocate for finding the right person for you. There's also community resources such as religious or spiritual communities, recreational programs. There's a lot of free resources out there as well. In our next episode, we'll be rebuilding connection after rage, and we'll explore age-appropriate ways to discuss emotions with children, repair techniques for different developmental stages, more partner communication strategies, creating family emotional safety plans. We'll dive into how to talk to toddlers about mommy's big feelings, teenage conversations about emotional regulation, partner support systems during recovery, creating family healing rituals, and preventing shame cycles. So remember, experiencing maternal rage doesn't make you a bad mother. In fact, acknowledging these feelings and seeking ways to handle them shows just how committed you are to being the best parent you can be. This journey isn't about achieving perfection, it's about growth, understanding, and finding healthier ways to navigate the intense emotions that come with motherhood. For more support and resources, visit healinghavenclinic.com, where you'll find free downloadable maternal rage toolkits, weekly blog posts on maternal mental health, information on our virtual support groups, recommended reading materials, monthly mindfulness newsletters, and upcoming workshops. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with other moms who might need support. Subscribe to Finding Haven on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review to help others find this resource. This is Michelle Thomasy, licensed clinical social worker and your host at Healing Haven Clinic, signing off. Until next time, remember, your anger doesn't define your motherhood, and you're doing better than you think.